Carter.
Yeah.
I know I bought my land off the marsh from him. I knew him pretty well. He used to play golf. He had a little golf course of his own down there.
Yeah. It's still there. It's not doing nothing, that piece of land.
I know he said to me one time, Bill, why don't you buy some land off of me? I said, two things. I haven't any money, and if I did, you want too damn much. He said, how do you know? I said, I wrote to you, into your place one day. All I got, the answer back, and the fellow wanted he wanted a mortgage on all my furniture and everything that I owned. He said, never did. I never ever heard of all I did. I said, anyway, I got no money. Well, he said, to buy some land off me, you don't need any money. And I said, well, you want too much. You don't know how much I want. I said, it's too much anyway. He said, well, could you pay $25 an acre? Just right down on the Simcoe Road, down by Brinkers, right across the road. The best land on the marsh.
I said,
yes, how much do you want? I said, 25 acres. He says, you bought 25 acres of land. And I never paid him a nickel. And I got Tony Prima to break it for $15 an acre. And he doubled this and got it all ready for sowing, and it only cost me $90. $75 an acre I bought the land for, 25 acres. And 15, that was $90 an acre.
What year was that?
Oh, damn if I know now. It was quite a ways after the first front 100 acres on the marsh was working. It was the second 100 acres to the south, right on.
Well, just a second. I got a couple of maps here I want to show you in a little while. So we want to
one of them. I had land there, and I sold. Steve Brinkers owns them now. And I think Steve's got more land on the marsh than anybody. He's got all the coolers, you know. He bought all the coolers and all their equipment and all his own. Bought across the road. He bought Platsko's and he bought his own and he bought mine.
Who's this, Mike?
Mike.
Mike?
Mike's old man.
Yeah, and he's a nice guy.
Mike now.
He was our neighbor for years, and we had a well between us. We went 228 feet to get well water, and we got it right in the ditch. Platsko, Mike, and us. And
came right up to the top of the ground?
Hmm?
Was it a flowing well?
Yeah, a flowing well.
They were all about 100 feet deep.
Yeah.
We went 228 feet.
Did you go that far?
Yeah, I had to. And we had a box about that long, about that wide, and about that deep. And they used to keep all the butter and everything else in there. They made shells there, but oh God, it was cold water.
Everybody had a flowing
water. But then when they dug this damn well down here, it went dry.
We dug a well up at the farms on the fifth line. We dug a well there. We were 225 feet, and we had the water. It was up that far from the top of the pipe.
Well, ours flowed right out.
We didn't want a flowing well.
We were getting about 3 gallons.
Everybody had a flowing well.
Not a lot, just about like you think, but that was enough for us.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I think this coming back, this money from the marsh, I think it was just a conglomeration of a lot of people that had land around the thing, wasn't it? All the land was donated, as far as I can find out, from all, you know. They never... the people that own land out on the marsh, from the highland to the marsh, they never got paid for any of that land at all. They just give that land to put the canal through. They never got paid, did they?
No,
they just did it all free gratis.
I don't know whether you fellows know these words, but I can remember when I was a kid during the First World War, standing on the corner when Thornton's on the hardware, and there was these two fellas talking. And one of them was W.D. Watson.
Oh, Watson, yeah.
W.D. that owned the Bradford Sash and Door Factory.
Did he?
Yes. And another fella. And they were talking about, this was during the war, First World War, they were talking about getting the land drained. And I listened and I couldn't understand. And when I went back home, I said to them, they're going to drain that land down, that swamp down there. And they said, you're dreaming again, Bill. I guess I am. I never thought no more about it. But that's who first started them. Alec Fraser used to live on the farm where Don is. That was the Fraser farm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know Fraser.
Old Pete Fraser.
Yeah. And Jesse Fraser and Jock Fraser went to school here, and Una taught school. she was a school teacher. They were redheaded. Then Jack Ward come onto that farm. He owned a hotel in Toronto. He bought the farm. And he moved down the other side of Aurora, on the right-hand side, before you got to the college. That's where he moved to, a house in there. You know those hills there, right there, mm-hmm. opposite, used to be the Hunt Club on the east side of the road.
Mm-hmm. Just opposite the cemetery
on
there.
On the west side.
Just
yeah,
opposite the cemetery.
Opposite there, that's right. That's where W.D. Watson went to.
But I just got here a little while ago. I just got his burial on that, in Aurora, and that when he died, and then I just got special kind of sheep or something, and he built the what we call the Village Inn now. He built that building.
Watson?
Oh,
yeah,
no,
Watson W.
No, I made the biggest lake. I had a friend in Toronto, and it was very well, Tommy Russell. He owned the Acme School and Gear and the Russell Knight Motor Company.
Motor Company.
And the CCM motor cycle there. And Tommy Russell said to me one day, coming around the corner in his car, he said to me, "Bill, why don't you buy that building?" I said, "I ain't got no money, Tommy." They wanted $1,700 for the whole building. Well, Jim Gray.
Yeah.
He said, "Well, I'll lend you the money, Bill." I said, "No, I'm not a hotel keeper. They're going to make it into a hotel." Oh, I could have got it for $1,700, uh-huh. and Tommy would loan me the money. You heard of Tommy Russell? Only last week.
He used to be called TA. Used to be called TA, didn't he?
Yeah,
TA Russell.
TA Russell.
Yeah.
Tommy.
Well, he
married a Brown. His wife was a daughter of the Brown that donated land for the Brown College and schools and the playground in Toronto.
Yeah, he had a big farm.
That's right.
Just south of Wilson Avenue on Keel Street.
And Buster,
we did
Brown,
top ratings for him.
His name was Irwin. In 1946, he came to Oshawa where Sam McCann was living. I was down there on a Sunday. And Sadie, their daughter, were to be married, him and Buster. They called him Buster, but his name was Irwin Brown. He was a sales manager for some big Ford Motor Company in Toronto. They had the sales, you know, like auto sales. And he took appendicitis, and goddamn, he died overnight. Mm-hmm. Just yeah. like that, just yeah. at Easter time.
Yeah.
And Sadie never got married. Oh. And she was Jackson, and another brother-in-law fellow was the Dr. Jackson that was
started the dog food
at the big where they tell the weatherman that down at Richmond Hill.
Yeah.
He was another brother-in-law. Dr. Kurzel was another brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Is that where the Kurzels related
yeah,
to Charlie?
Some
and
relation
that?
There.
That's where Charlie got his money from.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
That's where Charlie got all his money from after the war.
Well, anyway. That was it. And I could have got the money from Tommy Russell if I wanted it.
Who was the, whenever you start, there's three of you who have been involved in gardening, we'll call it that, we're growing fruits, growing vegetables on the marsh. Who were the people who came in first, were you Bill or so on?
No,
who were the people who took a lead? And you have one thing you have is growing it. The other thing is selling it.
Well,
and marketing
I'll tell you how I got into the produce business. Now, my first land, I worked for Professor Day for a couple of years, and my job was to. They had an acre and a fifth of celery. And Professor Day, Bill. You grate this celery and keep the weight, keep track of how much the weight that comes off of this patch. And it was right beside the barn, just east of the barn.
Now just a second, the barn, there's an insulated brick barn down there east of where Casey Back is now. Was that the old day barn?
Yes. The only barn down there, that was our property. Tom bought it while he went overseas, my brother Tom, and I run it while he was overseas.
It's a little insul brick barn. It's got a bit of a lean-to there. Is that back in there now?
No, I don't think that's the one. I think he was down further. He'd be below...
Belkos.
Belkos.
Steve Belko.
Okay. Do you know where the
Rendell's was?
They were
right
just
next
this
to
side
that.
Of it. Yeah. We called ours the willow stands. There were three big willow trees. Right.
One's still there.
The only one down there.
Is the barn still there?
No.
But the most prominent was then. They always said the Dutch, but I can remember when there was a lot of Italians on the southern land, and Doan's land was all Italian fellas. On Ferris's land, it was all Czechoslovaks and Yugoslavs and those kind of Hungarians. Mm-hmm. And over here on Juliana Avenue, it was all Germans and Hungarians, you know what I mean. Chris Brenz and all that gang. All Germans.
Slovaks?
Yeah.
Well, that was
they were Germans.
Oh, that's right. They're Germans.
All Germans.
Germans.
Well, that was on the Nolan Marsh, wasn't it?
Yes.
On
Juliana Avenue and the next one over where Tom Miedemann lived.
Mm-hmm.
That was all. Then, after that, when they built those new three houses, the Dutch come in. And they started to work. There was a few English families, quite a few English families come in. So there you are. Who was the first? I can't tell you.
I think the first Dutchman that ever came to town that I can remember was old Pete Rawl and Garrett
Peter and
all that.
Rawl and Garrett,
1925,
yeah.
I think it was. Because John went to the Charlie Wilson to get a pair of shoes, and he asked for a pair of shoes size 25. Well, he used to everybody. I seen John a few years ago before he went west, and I kid him about these shoes. He forgot all about it. But it was metric sizes he was after for.
Yeah. Well, you know, Rawls had the first land broken on the west side and on the York County side
on
of
there.
The big scheme, and Artie Saint owned the land.
That's right, yeah.
And they had land broken before I did on this side the year before.
Yeah.
And that was in 60. 30.
Yeah, it was in 30, yeah.
60, what's wrong with me? 30.
You're just 30 years old.
You're not bad, Bill, 30 years old. You're all right there for a young guy, right, guys?
Well, you see, in that book, that Swampland book that's in the paper, or that Dutchman wrote, he's got its Archie Saint in there, but it's not Archie Saint,
no,
it was Archie
Saint.
He
got in that post.
Archie Saint had the marsh up there where you're talking about Rawls and that. It was
Archie.
A.J. A.J.,
yeah. He had the land right there. You know where? Leo, where you worked.
Yeah.
Right back.
Yeah, right there.
Alanson's
land.
Where Pete Ryan was. Pete Ryan. Yeah. You know where Pete Ryan was?
Yeah.
Peter
Green. Back. Yeah. And Davey had it for a while.
Davey had it for a while.
Yes.
The old man's up on the canal bank with his transit, and I'm down the marsh putting these stakes up.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't hold the stake plumb in the air. And then I'd lean like that. No, you got to move the stake over. And there I am trying to drive a stake in that water flying up my face, and you could hear me. So we're in 40 miles away, but that we surveyed that road up through there, Lanson's Road. We surveyed that road up through there for our train.
Well,
that's
I
when
went
he
in
did,
there one,
broke it up then.
I gave old man Davey one time when I had the greenhouse. I put in a bed of cabbage, 50 feet long, 6 feet wide, so broadcast. I had the greenhouse uptown then, and when it come to sell them, nobody wanted them. And the wife said to me, what are you going to do with them cabbage on a Sunday? I said, I don't know what the hell I'll do with them. Nobody's wanting them. She said, I'd plant them. I said, I'd plant all them? I said, well, fill the whole damn marsh, I thought. Well, she said, I wouldn't care to plant them. So I said to Jack Ward, he was working for me, that's Gwenny Ward. You remember Jack Ward,
mm-hmm.
Billy's brother? I said, what do you think, Jack? man, keep the women quiet.
That's a good English one for you.
Anyway, we planted them. And Joby Morris was down there, and he came over. One day, all then the fellas all down there, Sabre Chuck and all them fellas, and these fellas all started calling me sauerkraut. I had nothing but cabbage. Well, Joby Morris come over one day in June. He had this land abuses and that land down there, and he grew up. And he said to me, "How's the cabbage, Billy?" And I said, "Oh, here she comes again." And I said, "All right, Joby, why?" Well, he says, "You know, I was to the market today, and ain't a goddamn cabbage in the country." I said, "You're not kidding." Yeah, I'm crying. So anyway, I had to give my old man Davy 10 flats, these are fish flats, full of cabbage plants. He like ram full to get rid of them. And he called up the boys and my and they all went over and they planted them. Well, when he come to harvest them, he said to me, "Billy, can you handle them cabbage?" I said, "Yes." They'd say, "Well, they're worth 90 cents a dozen." Oh, I said, "I'll give you $1.20, they're worth that. You cut them, put them alongside the road over there." So that's what he did. And the cabbage, I sold them all to Hugh Walker and Sons Limited in Guelph. And I trucked them over there loose. I used to put on about 6 ton of cabbage loose and drive over there. Well, old man Davy said to me one day, "You know, Billy," he said, "that cabbage you gave me made me more money than anything I ever grew on the marsh." He said, "Hey, we didn't put only a little bit of fertilizer on, and all we had to cut them and throw them in the heap for you." He says, "Okay. We got." I said, "Well, I had fellas coming from Windsor, Tilbury, Hamilton, Trotter, and I had old fellow from Newmarket. There used to be in the banana business, what's his, Rustos, all coming there cutting their own. All the wife had to do was keep track of them, mark them down. And I was getting $4 a dozen delivered over to Guelph.
Did they run the dredge in the wintertime? That's what.
Yes.
Yeah.
They run it all winter. They could manage to lift her and break her. They were going for 3 years then, 24 hours a day. I don't think they worked Sundays. They wouldn't work Sundays in those days. I don't think.
Well, I can't remember.
Do you think they went 7 days
they
a week?
They had to move, otherwise they would have frozen solids.
Yeah. Well, in the wintertime, yeah. So, it took them three years to go down there, 17 miles.
Well, it's hard to say.
The frost wouldn't go down too deep in the bush.
No. A lot of snow, water.
Oh, geez, they had snow in those days. And the brush laying on top of there, too, after they cut the bush off.
No, they worked every day.
Yeah. Okay, Bill, well, you say you'd sell to somebody. Now, these people came into Bradford, did they, looking for produce? Was that what happened, or did you have to go looking for them?
I went looking. I went all through the North Country, too. How they got there, I was down on Simcoe Road, and I had a truck, and I used to go and have stuff and sell it. And the boys down there, like Samura and them, could come there and say, "Bill, can you sell 50 cases of lettuce for me?" I'd say, "Oh, I'd put it in, I'll see what I can do." Well, I'd go out and I'd sell it. And we had a meeting on a Saturday morning around 9 o'clock. And they would meet up at the corner of Coolers. That's where we all used to get together there. And I'd say, "Well, I got 50 cases of lettuce from you. Here's what I got for it." I'd give them the money. "Now, you can pay me what you think it's worth to me." And I never charged them, but they gave me what I owed for that. And that's how I started in the business. Well, I had the land down there and the work. And after I was down there a year, the goddamn phone was ringing about every hour, every half hour. Oh, I'd have to run into town to get the long distance. It was somebody who wanted to give an order for stuff for the next day or the day after. And I was doing continually running backward and forward answering the phone. So I decided to give the land to wife and Tom, and I'd go into the wholesale business. Well, then I connected up with Loblaws and bought for them for 9 years. They paid me for buying and paid me for trucking.
What year would this be? Excuse me, Bill, but what year would this be?
Well,
roughly?
No, I had a 36, I had a 36, a 33 maple leaf. I had a 29 share, a 31 Maple Leaf, a 33 Maple Leaf, a 36 Maple Leaf, a 40 Dodge, a 40 Mack truck, and a 44 Mack truck. And I was using them all. I was going to North Bay and Timmins and Cochrane and Kappa's Casing and Aranda and Sunbury.
Had to be in the 50s, Joe.
Yeah. Anyway, the funny part of it was, I made a damn fool of myself. I was doing a lot of business for Gamble Robinson or International Fruit, and they talked me into opening a branch of International Fruit Distributors right in Bradford, which I did. And I worked for them for 11 years. And from the day I worked, started to work, from the time I quit, I never got a raise.
That's
and I wasn't getting too much, and they were good to me. I mean, I put in a whole lot of long hours, from 6 o'clock in the morning till midnight some day after day, day after day. But anyway, I quit after 9 years. But all the time I was working for International Fruit or Pacific Fruit and Produce Company, Loblaws wouldn't buy a bloody thing from me. Frank Morley, no, Jemison, the big boss, no. But when times were tough and I'd have to go out and hustle to get stuff and that, Jemison would come down and say, "Bill, been a tough week." "Yeah, damn right. Put $50, $75 on your bill this week, it'll be all right." Anyway, when I quit International Fruit, the phone rang the next day, and it was the boss of Loblaws. And he says, "Bill, I hear you quit International." And I said, "Yes. What are you going to do?" "I don't know yet. I'll be down to see you." "Yeah, come on down. I want to talk to you." I went down the next day, and he said, "What are you going to do?" Well, I said, "We're pretty made up our mind. We're going to go and work tonight." "All right." So we called in one of the office boys and said, "You can go get our buyer." And he told the wire who I was, how long I'd been working for them and all that. And I wanted to give him some of our business, half our business. "Well, all right," he says, "when can you start?" "Johnny Wilkerson." "Oh," I said, "you can start any time." "Can you start tomorrow?" I said, "Sure, I can start tomorrow. I wasn't going to let him start. Going to stop me from starting." I started, and I stayed right with him until I quit, closed the shop. But they were good. I could go into and see, what's his name, Tommy Thomas, an old Watson, and say, "Listen, Tommy, I need $10,000. He'd write the check, and I'll go to old man Watson upstairs in the office. I'll put a baptistry in front, and I'd give him the check. He'd look at me, he'd sign it, and all the years I went there, he never ever once said good day or kissed my ass or anything else. He never spoke to me once. Never spoke once.
Did that become Ontario Produce? No.
No. That was Ontario Produce, their IGA.
IGA.
Max Morris. Well, I worked for them. And in one winter I worked for them, and I did a lot of business with them, and they were good to me. And I worked there one winter, and in the spring I said to Max Owens, and I said, "Oh, Max, I guess I'll be leaving you this week." "Oh, where are you going?" I said, "I got to go back to the farm." I said, "I got to get some fertilizer and seed if I can raise enough money someplace." "Oh, you need some money?" I said, "Boy, sure, you can't buy fertilizer without money." "Well, go on up and see Clarkie upstairs. Tell him to write you a check for $1,000. I said, "I don't need $1,000. $500 or $1,000. Well, he didn't come upstairs. He stood at the bottom of the stairs. And when I come out of the office, he was still standing there waiting for me to come with the check. So I give it to him, and he signed it. And but he said, no, I want your car when you go to the market. I said, all right. Well, anyway, I had quit the Marsh, and May and Tom were looking after it. I got so busy. And I said to Tom, now there's a patch of lettuce down there, right down there, and it's looking very good. And there's 7 bags of nitrate there. I want you to nitrate it when it gets a certain size. And he said, all right, Dad. Well, when that lettuce come to be cut, the lettuce got awful scarce. It was the first week in August. And I had chased all over for getting lettuce, and I got enough to do Loblaws, where some of my growers that were supplying me were offered by Leo Delzada, $2 a case more than I was paying. But these were my fellas that I bought every day from, kept them, everything, and not only lettuce, but everything they grew, I bought. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't sell them. But anyway, I got home a couple of days after this, and I began to think, damn, that patch of lettuce I gave Tom and May should be ready to cut. So I said to my dinner time, I said, where's that cat? That field of lettuce should be cut, ready to cut, May. Oh, yes, she says. Sure, she says, we cut it the other day. I said, well, you cut it the other day. Who in the hell do you sell it to? Max Wolf come up. And he sent up 3 trucks. And he said, the Platschko boys and the old man and woman come over. Brinkers come over, the 2 Brinkerses, and Conrad Kulak and his wife. And who the hell was? Oh, yes. A couple more come over. And they cut all day long and loaded 3 truckloads of lettuce, all for Max Wolf, Ontario Produce. And I never got the bloody cent of old lettuce and meat chasing all over here.
That sounds like a lot of deals on the market in North Day.
May said to me, you weren't paid enough money.
Did old Dave Sullivan have much to do? He had nothing to do. He just had Marsh land. He never worked.
No, he never worked anywhere.
No,
Dave.
I didn't think so. He just had the land.
Yeah. He had that gravel pit. Say, were you ever in that gravel pit?
Yep. Not lately.
That was the greatest cement gravel there was. It used to have. It would set better than any gravel I ever saw.
That's where old Davey. Dan McDonald lost a finger. He set the charge. He didn't put a long enough fuse on. And it blew up before he could get away, and he lost the tip off his finger. It was so darn hard they had to blow it off. That's Baines's pit down there.
I know. We had a front end. We had a tractor with a front end loader. Yeah. We were down the bottom of that, and it was just
were
like
you
it was
in
like
that
con-
pit?
Yeah, it was just like concrete in the bottom.
Oh, geez, it
were
was
you
hard.
In that pit?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of gravel come out of that pit, boy.
Yeah, we used to get it out there. That was good gravel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good cement gravel, anyway.
Yeah. Good for you could just put it on a laneway, and it was so fine. The stones were just like
hay gravel.
Yeah. You know, some of the boys used to have the hotbeds back in there in the spring.
Right up
again the gravel. Always with the sun and shine on that gravel and get warm and damn stuff.
Who was that?
Del Ben and them fellas.
Oh, Del Ben.
The gravel face that hold the heat.
Yeah, they used to grow early celery.
Start the celery there.
And then transplant it out in the field. Well.
Okay, so when they... When you were at the very beginning of the Marsh, though, like you did we used to hear them about Lenson Celery Company and then truckloads. Yeah. Well, I guess the churches had trucks going into Toronto every day.
Yeah, they picked up every night for me. Even you or me, if I wasn't going to Toronto, I just had 50 or 60 pieces. The church had taken. It wouldn't pay me to go.
Yeah, okay, now, would you have sold that before it went on the truck, or did you sell it when it got to
that? No, that all depends. You could have had it sold, or you could be sent into the commission market. and they would sell it on commission at the market in Toronto for a young street.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you remember then there was a period of time there when Ben had part of the old river dammed off, you remember, and he was putting his carp over there?
Oh, he'd put the carp in there.
Well, then some of these fellows off the marsh weren't getting enough in Toronto, and they were charging, what, 15 cents a crate to dump their lettuce and that they weren't using, yeah, that they couldn't use? Well, they'd bring it back up and throw it over there.
Oh, yeah.
And Ben fed it to these carp, and you should have seen them carp eat that stuff. Holy crap, they just churn up that oil. But he said it was good bone biller, but it wouldn't put no beef on them. So then he had to put the wheat to them, put the weight to them.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff would dump over that canal bank down there. Yeah.
But you were saying that you'd shipped a carload of lettuce or something to Quebec City, and you're still looking for
red onions. Merker Brothers, that was Western Produce.
How prevalent was that? You know, like you'd ship something and not get paid.
I have seen, and I know of dozens of fellows that ship stuff to the commission market, get a ticket and a bill back for dumping the stuff.
Yeah.
And charge you for dumping.
That's the reason why they're throwing it over the feeding the fish.
Instead of getting any money, there was too much of a glut on the market, and they'd have to take it to the dump, and they'd send you a bill of $15 or $20.
Back. And you never got your crates back either.
You never got your crates back. No. You never got paid for your walking down.
Professor Dave.
And the fellow that went down to take it for you, if you didn't take it yourself, he never got anything for trucking it down because he never got any money for it.
And Professor Day, how many carloads of celery did he send down to Montreal?
No, you paid.
Nobody paid.
No.
He just broke them right.
Well, I sent this carload of red onion, red Weatherfields, and there was a broker in Quebec City that always bought red onions. And Merker Brother said to me, "Have you got any red onions, Bill?" And I said, "Yes, we've got an acre of red Weatherfields." Bill, he says, "I've got a man that can use them." So when they were ready, he got me to ship them from Guildford. And we put a load on of 750 bags of red Weatherfields, Bill out to Quebec. And I asked a goddamn Dave Merker, he was the oldest brother of those, Dave and Maxie, and the oldest brother. I never got any satisfaction where the man ever got them, where the hell they went to. Oh, I never got a cent for that whole car on. And they were going to Cookstown. And I grew a celery at Cookstown that I used to send express. You have to go down to Guildford and ship it up to Gamble Robinson, 25 cases at a time. Why express.
This map, Bill, is the map that Prof. Day drew in 1911 when he came out and did the original review of the marsh.
1911.
Yeah. And these are the people who owned the land at that time.
Yeah.
Now I don't know whether you can see all these names or not down here.
No,
but
I can't see.
Well, here's
if you
Hamilton.
Give me glasses, I couldn't see.
Even here's Hamilton.
That'd be Laddie Hamilton.
Laddie Hamilton. I knew Laddie real well.
And there's
Archer. Well, he wasn't on the marsh.
Yeah, Jimmy Archer.
Archer and John.
Yes.
John Sweezy.
Yeah. John Sweezy.
Yeah. Bill Graham.
Yeah.
Bill, is that McClure?
I don't remember.
Another Graham down there. Now, these are the ones that are down then.
That's Jamaica Farms. When you say Jack Sweezy there, that's Jamaica Farms.
Right over here.
Yeah.
Over here on Bathurst Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's, I was talking with Sam here the other day, this 1911 one, this should have been Marino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John.
And then the Catania's bought it. You bought it in about 1918. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then over here, you get over in here, there's the McDonald girls.
Well, oh, yeah.
Gosnell. Sutherland over in here, and so on and so on and so on. This is a better map, but this is the one, this one is the map that he used when they dredged the canal.
When they dredged the canal. Yeah, who drew this up?
Well, these are Prof. Day maps. These this is This map here, the first one I showed you,
yeah,
we got that this summer from Bill Day's widow. And she's up in
Bill, Bill Day, is Bill still living?
No,
Bill's been gone for a long time.
But his wife is up in a nursing home up in Barrie.
Is she?
And so we talked to her this summer. And so she gave us two things, which are, she gave us a book called The Canadian Engineer, the 1927 edition of The Canadian Engineer. And that picture was in it.
Oh, yes.
And so we took it up to Sue Curtis,
yeah,
and Sue took that picture from this magazine article,
yeah,
and enlarged it for us. Well, that's the best picture that we have so far of the dredge.
That's a good picture.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good picture, yeah.
And so we took and did that. And
that
then,
was Sue Curtis. Is that Curly Curtis's wife?
Yeah. No, Curtis's son's wife.
Oh.
Yeah. He's a trucker. A trucker.
Yeah.
They used to live up near the Graham Side Road, didn't they?
Yeah.
They live
By Bobby Falls.
Yeah, right next door to Bobby Falls. But now they're up at Thornton.
Yeah. And the other thing she had was this linen map. It's on linen. And this is what I showed you first, is the photocopy we did of that. Now I gave Ron Simpson has it now, and he's got his young lad, and he's going to copy it for us, redraw it, because it's in such a state that we can't photocopy it or anything like that.
No,
but he's going to redraw it for us and put all the names on that so we can see it.
And then you'll take a copy.
Yeah, and then so we got those two pieces. They're just really valuable putting. But this is, now you were talking. Okay, now Bill, here's Fred Doan's here. This is the fifth line here coming in here. Right? This is the fifth line.
Yeah, and there's Doan's Bridge right here. There's Doan's Bridge will be right there.
Doan's Bridge will be right here, like where it crosses the...
Oh, sorry, yeah, sorry,
yeah. That's where it'll cross
right,
there.
That's how we used to come down through his lane from Darlings.
Yeah, between Emerson Ferris's and the Browns there.
That's right. And stop at the bridge. We couldn't get no farther on the north side of the bridge.
Well, when did the road get put in where Hernick's were... And where Junkman has the greenhouses now, you know, Simcoe Road?
That was done after that.
Yes, long after.
That'd be after the war too, wouldn't it?
You don't mean the road? You don't mean
from Archer's
this side road coming down?
No, I'm talking about Simcoe Road.
Simcoe Road to Doan's Bridge. That's what he's talking about.
No, it goes to Turner's Bridge.
Or Turner's Bridge.
Turner's Bridge.
Turner's Bridge.
Yeah.
Well, Turner's
Bridge. I always called it Archer's Bridge.
The road only went to Jim Archer's Gate until they opened up the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to go to Jim Archer's and milk the cows in 1917 and keep the milk for milking the cows when we had the dairy and short of milk. But you couldn't go no farther than Jim's Gate unless you went on private property. That wasn't the road then.
No. Didn't that belong to Turner?
No.
Oh. Not in those days, no.
Jim Archer.
Yeah.
He always owned it. Jim, that, Kathleen Archer. Did you remember, Philip, by the name of he worked on the factory, and he was a French fella. Hell, I know his name as well as I know my own. She married him anyway, and they lived in Gillis's house.
Oh, not that Jones. Not Jones.
Yeah, Jones. She married him.
The guy that knocked up all the women.
Yeah. And he was my foreman when I worked in the factory. He was my foreman over the women and Jockey, your brother.
Yeah.
And he... Jones, he got running around with the women there, had let him go.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, that was always Jim Archer's.
Yeah.
And then next to him was, Medcalf Sam Quinn lived there a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But did that road come down like on the line between here, the 14th and the 15th? This would be Simcoe Road here, would it be? Came down just on Turner's property, is that it? Did that road come down there?
Yes, you know.
This doesn't show it here. You see, this would be Simcoe Street here. Now Simcoe Road comes back over. Does it come over one lot and come down?
No.
This
Simcoe
here.
Road, go right.
It would just be this road right here. That would because the canal went right through Archer's property, didn't it?
This is Archer's here.
Yeah.
Oh, that.
Wait a minute, my boys. In 1918, I drew gravel out of that pit halfway down the road. You remember the greenhouses that across opposite? You know where the school is there, Charles School?
Yeah, yeah.
Just this side of at the kink of the road?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's a gravel pit in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dan Collins and I opened that up, and that's where we drew the gravel to gravel the roads here. In 19...
Well, that was Archer's property then.
Who was?
Archer's property.
Yes, yeah, on Archer's property. Yeah. There's a little grove of trees around there now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. that was the gravel pit.
Well, that's right.
That was the only way. We were the only ones in there then. That was all his farm.
And they dumped garbage there when Hurricane Hazel went through.
Right.
They dumped a bunch of garbage that I didn't
yes.
know there. Okay. Right. Now, where was the property that you this map doesn't show the.
Simcoe Road going right through the river.
Well, this would be the small marsh here, eh? This would be the small marsh here.
Well,
this map is.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be run along here, follow around here, and circles around. And across, a little bit crossed over the 6th concession there, and come back here to, yeah. well, to here then. Mm-hmm. You come back that far at yeah. that time.
Yeah.
It crossed over in the township
you see,
a bit.
You see, these two maps don't lie, don't look very well. They don't sit on top of each other very well. They're schematic is what they are. They're not really drawn to scale. So the property that you farm, Bill, where was it?
Right on Simcoe Street, right straight south. Like the very last lot south on Simcoe Street.
On Simcoe
before Street. You hit the river.
I see. Okay, be right in here then.
You know where Santa Street is on the marsh? Off of Simcoe Road.
Wheel. Where's Fred Doan?
See where the river runs?
Fred Doan.
Right
this
here.
Is Center Street.
Canal,
here. This is, this
yeah,
is Center Street here.
Center
I would
Street.
Say.
Well, this one coming down this way then.
He started in a little scheme and then he.
this is
where's Center. The river?
Where do you think Junkman's is, George?
Junkman's? I would say that it's right there.
Well, then Bill's got to be way down in here someplace.
Okay. Here, there's.